Welcome to the Small Caps Podcast, where we discuss news and information related to ASX-listed companies and financial markets, keeping investors informed. Note that the content in this podcast is not financial or investment advice, and be sure to head over to smallcaps.com.au to get the latest market news. Now, without further delay, here's today's podcast.
Welcome back to the program, and today I am delighted to grab somebody who's pretty busy at the moment. His name is Paul Locke. He's the Managing Director of Pan Asia Metals. Now, why is he busy? He's busy because they're going to be listing on the ASX in mid-September, and they have an offer open at the moment, which closes on the 19th of August. So I grabbed Paul and asked him to come on the program and explain to us who are Pan Asia Metals, why is it so exciting for him, and what can investors expect for future news. Welcome to the program, Paul. Great to see you.
Thanks, Carrie. It's great to be here.
Well, first up, let's talk about you're hitting the ASX in mid-September. Who are Pan Asia Metals, and why are you so excited about your projects in Asia at the moment?
Well, because we have the best projects.
Of course you do.
Pan Asia Metals, David Hobby, the chief geologist, and I have been working together since 2013.
Yep.
So we went up to Myanmar when that opened up, and we've been focusing on the tin tungsten belt since then, which is goes from Myanmar through Thailand, Malaysia to the Tin Islands. And we really like this belt because it's underexplored. There's not a lot of competition. And you've really got to do your homework to find the gems. So we think we've found three projects there, which are fantastic. And we've got some more in the pipeline to bring on board later.
Okay, so let's talk about those three projects. First of all, what I want to know is, you know, putting my investor hat on, why has it been underexplored? And how did you come across these three projects?
Okay, well, Southeast Asia is generally a difficult environment to operate in. One of the keys is the language barrier. There's some perception issues which have arisen over time. And also because it's close to us, any issues in the news tend to filter into Australia fairly easy, whereas if you're exploring in Africa or South America, what's happening there politically really doesn't get back to Australia. So there's a perception issue that Southeast Asia is difficult. So that creates a barrier to investors and to explorers. But it's not a correct barrier, it's unnatural. Once you understand the environment and the people, which I love working with, there's a lot of opportunity there, but you need to be patient. This is the case in any jurisdiction. You just don't walk in and do what you want to do. Patience is the key.
And you have been patient. So let's talk about the fact that these projects are predominantly Thailand. Historically, there's been a couple of challenges up in Thailand, geopolitical risk, country risk, or do you not see that as an issue? You've been up there for a long time.
I don't see it as an issue, but everyone knows the Kingsgate story. So many investors ask that, well, what about Kingsgate and what happened there and will they take your asset? Now, there's a lot of different opinions. We've been up there for 7 years and we get a lot of feedback on the ground, and the Kingsgate story is a two-way street. It didn't just happen. The Thai government didn't take the asset off them. This brewed over a long time. Unfortunately for Kingsgate, it got to the Prime Minister, and it got to the Prime Minister, I think around 2015, after the coup, when the military kicked the government out because they couldn't get it together. And at that point, the new Prime Minister had an option when this arrived. He had the option to support the Thai people. And after a coup, that's probably what you want to do, or an option to support the foreign company. So from his situation, it was a pretty easy decision. And unfortunately, their timing was wrong for this to get to the Prime Minister. As a result, the whole mining law was changed, and the Thai government never wanted to see this situation get to the ministers again, below the ministers. And as a result, ministers don't sign off on licenses anymore. The director general does. So they remove politics from it. So oddly, the whole Kingsgate thing produced a better outcome for explorers there.
Wow. Okay. That's really interesting. So actually, out of a sort of a situation which was tricky, has come a much more stable, I guess, jurisdiction to work in because of that prior issue.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's right. And well, just quickly on that, the reason Kingsgate has recourse, and a lot of people don't understand this, is that there's a free trade agreement between Australia and Thailand. There's no free trade agreement between Australia and any African company, or except Chile, any South American country. So as a result, Kingsgate had an arbitration available to it to challenge what had been done. And that's why Kingsgate has recourse. In another jurisdiction, without that arbitration ability, the outcome would be a lot different.
Okay, well, look, let's move on from that, because it sounds to me like that's not a concern for you at all. It's specialty metals. You've got tungsten and lithium projects. Now, the lithium market has obviously it's been a bit tough lately. Do you see that as an opportunity for you going forward? I mean, you're exploring at the moment. You've got three interesting projects. Do you see the lithium market getting a lot stronger and the timing-wise for your project to come on board?
Well, Kerry, the way we look at projects, it's all about cost. So right now, if you look at the dynamic of the gold money, everyone's pouring money into gold projects because the gold price is high. But by the time these projects actually get up and running, if they do, where will the gold price be? The same with lithium. In 2015, lithium may as well have been clay. No one could care less. And then, you know, it got going. And in 2015, there were, I think, three companies on lithium focus. No one could care less. By mid-2016, actually April 2016, I think there were 40 professional lithium companies. So everyone jumped on the bandwagon. One shortfall in most of the activity is no one looks at costs and where you expect to be on the cost curve. So one of the reasons we're in Asia is it's a low-cost environment. So Malaysia and Thailand are advanced industrial centres and a lot of manufacturing happens there. A lot of Australian companies manufacture there. Yeah. So we're already ahead from that perspective. And then we look at our projects and go, well, why are we here? Why do we think we can do something better than the other people, who our competition? And the reason is that, the geology's got to stack up, the geography, which we've got right, and then what we can do with the product. So it's about costs. If you think you've got your cost box ticked, you're basically halfway there.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that, you can have the best project in the world, but if the costs blow out, you might as well leave the stuff in the ground. So that's a big thing for you guys and working up in these areas, the costs are a lot less.
It's a huge advantage there. And then with the metallurgy, so in our lithium, we're dealing with lepidolite. And you might be aware that Lepidico, LPD, the only other lepidolite company in the global peer group for lithium, released their DFS on the 28th of May, and it had them producing lithium hydroxide at a cost which was at the bottom of the cost curve. So that's important. But the other important thing was that they were producing their first stage or phase one plant was 5,000 tonnes per annum. So they don't need economies of scale to make it work. If you look at the global peer group, right now I think there's around 20 companies with a feasibility study for lithium carbonate or lithium hydroxide production. The average capex or entry is $420 million, and the average tons is around 21,000 tons. So you've got an economies of scale. You can't build a 5,000 ton plant. Pitico in the small scale plant is spending $130 million. So that's really important on the lithium, and that's why we think we've actually got something which works. Of course I want the lithium market to be sky high, but I'm not too concerned if it bottoms out because I know our project will be bankable.
So why should investors get interested in Pan Asia? Low cost, but it is early days. You are still exploring. What is it that makes you, you know, you and obviously David Hobby, who's very, very experienced, why have you got excited about this area and these three projects, apart from the fact that it's low cost and you know, you feel that the jurisdiction is good? Tell me why investors should get excited about this area.
Well, it's about ability to value add. So I'm a big believer in having lots of options. So many companies, just by the nature of their geography, can't move past the mine gate. There are other dynamics which stop it, but geography is a big one. So they're always stuck selling a concentrate, and if you're a concentrate seller, you generally have one or two customers, trading companies. Whereas if you've got projects where you can realistically move past the gate, then a whole new world of options or opportunities opens up to you. So when we're looking at our projects, it's not just the three projects we've got in Southeast Asia now, it's all the knowledge we've built up and some potential projects coming through to add to the portfolio. To progress the projects, it's the ability to value add. For instance, with tungsten, the reference price for tungsten sales is APT, ammonium paratungstate. If I'm selling concentrate, my price will be a 30% discount, thereabouts, to the APT price. If I'm selling APT, that's 30% more revenue. If I'm selling an advanced product to that, it's 30 to 50% additional margin. So as you move downstream, you broaden your customer base, you increase your margins, and you have more stability in your business. You become more of an industrial company. And a really good example would be Lynas.
So is that what you're looking at? You're looking at sort of the higher value downstream products rather than just that lower value concentrate from the mine gate. And so what you're saying is we're going to add value along the way, and that's what makes us stand out from the other competitors out there at the moment who are also in the tungsten and the lithium markets.
That's exactly right. So if you look at the global tungsten market, for instance, I think in our peer group, we track about 50 projects, and about 35 of those projects are in high cost. Those projects have been through several cycles. So it's fairly certain that unless the tungsten price is very high, it's going to be difficult to fund them. So if you're a concentrate seller and you're in a high cost jurisdiction, as an investor, there's not much option. Where we are low cost, so already the project has a doability. I'm going to create an index called doability, 1 out of 10. We're 10 out of 10 doability.
I love it.
And then if we can move past the mine gate, we start to attract a different sort of customer and a different business dynamic. So my background was I used to bank leverage buyouts. I used to work in M&A and as a corporate advisor, and I've watched companies accumulate and grow. And ultimately, as you start to build a company, to take a little company here and then add to your portfolio doesn't take much. So once you've got a foundation, it can become pretty exciting when you look at the global market of opportunities of how you can build a company. So to answer your question, Kerry, investors are getting more than a mine gate project. They're getting potential for something bigger.
Well, that's what I was just about to say. I mean, you're not really a typical mining company. You're more a sort of a mining / industrial company. You're a product company as well. Would that be?
Well, we would like to be. That's our aspiration. Yeah. We are purely an exploration company now. We want to become an exploration and development company very soon. And we're, for our Reonkiet lithium project, we're on the cusp of pushing those through to the feasibility, and so we become a development company. But ultimately, I find the downstream market far more interesting because there's so many more different opportunities.
Your offer is open now until the 19th of August. You're listing in mid-September. Why Why now? Are all the ducks in a row now? Just explain from an investor point of view what they can expect, why the listing now, and what they can expect from a news point of view in the near future, if you can.
Well, we were going to list in March, so we were basically ready to go. And we lost 3 months. At the end of the day, we had to make a decision. Do we wait for COVID to finish? And I have no idea when it will. And given Victoria, it seems that when the end is near, it's not so near. And we've got work to do on our projects. So we decided to take a bit of a chance. It seems that luck might be on our side because there's a lot of interest and activity in the markets. It was really because we've just got to move forward.
So is it just, if I could just touch on that briefly, is COVID impacting the projects at all, or do you have sort of a local workforce and the ability to keep moving forward?
The answer is no. So interestingly, in Thailand was the first country to have a COVID case, and they had thermo imaging cameras in their airport on the 3rd of January. And they basically wanted to stamp it out as quickly as possible. So we've got a full team in the field working as we speak. We've got our head office is in Bangkok. So we find that given all our activities there, it's better to have local people. So we're moving around, it's all fine.
Paul Lock from Pan Asia Metals, thanks for joining the program today. All the best with the project, and we look forward to future news.
Thanks, Kerry. Cheers.